The Athletic.
Starcast, the German football pod, brought to you by The Athletic. Today it's Viva Colonia, as Elvis leaves the building, or the Borussia Park Stadium rather, with Gladbach's corner flag and 3 points in the Lower Rhine derby. Things are just as bad for the other Borussia. Dortmund lose again, this time at Freiburg. We wonder, are they adding for the Europa League? We will also bring you news of a big win for Bayer Leverkusen and explain how Bayern Munich came in for some capital punishment, courtesy of an evil conspiracy, or perhaps just good old German punctuality. All of this and more in Stahlcast. Hello, dear listener, and hello, Christoph Biermann, who's battled heavy snowfall in Berlin to be with us today. But before we start, a quick reminder that you can read all The Athletic's fine football content for just £3.99 at the moment. Go to theathletic.com/StahlcastPod to sign up. So, Christoph, apart from the scandal of a Berlin airport not working to time, or was it Bayern's fault? We will find out soon. What was the biggest moment for you this weekend, or the biggest story?
Elvis lives, probably, at least in Cologne, giving them a victory in the local derby at Mönchengladbach. Something rarely happens. A very good Hertha against a bit better Bayern team, and Dortmund's problems again. Wolfsburg rolling, Frankfurt rolling, Union Berlin not rolling anymore.
Yeah, I jinxed them.
Yeah, and the outrage of Bayern at the Berlin airport because they were 4 minutes late to get their flight to Doha. That created a lot of outrage and a lot of fun. Among others.
A big conspiracy theory there being mooted as well. But we're going to go into that a little bit later. I think, having listened to you intently, that the biggest story of the weekend has to be, unfortunately, and we've been here before, Borussia Dortmund losing yet another game that perhaps they should have won. This is the eighth defeat, 2-1 away to Freiburg. And they're now in sixth place. They've nearly won as many games as they've lost. The gap between them and the top four is now 4 points. And to make matters worse, they probably got one of the worst draws in the DFB Pokal. They'll be up against future manager question mark Marco Rose and his Borussia Mönchengladbach in the quarterfinals of the Cup next month. Christopher used to blame Lucien Favre. He can no longer be accused.
You did of, that.
Yes, me. Yes. This is the royal we. This is the wheel of the Stahlcast voice.
Okay.
He's no longer there. Question is, if we were to do this podcast in German, I would say to you, I would ask you, are we jenseits von Eden? Sorry, listeners. This is very difficult to translate. It's a play on words on Edin Terzic. And the question is, is he already running out of time, even though he's only supposed to be there until the end of the season?
I would plead not guilty, Your Honor, because...
You're not the one who's accused.
Maybe as a defendant of Edin Terzic, right, and even the parts of the Borussia Dortmund team, because I think, I mean, I'm a big advocate on looking at this, are teams lucky or unlucky? Are their games jinxed a bit or what's going on? And if you look at recent performances from Borussia Dortmund where they have been losing, we sometimes, not in all cases, but especially in Freiburg, It's a game you normally don't lose because Freiburg created not much and were rewarded with two goals from long distance shots, where on the other side of the pitch, Borussia Dortmund was not able to convert good chances. And I think we have to talk about Marvin Hitz, the goalkeeper, because surely... the second goal was his fault, maybe the first one as well. And so Although Borussia Dortmund played okay, and some of the players said so, and I think they rightly said so, they got a defeat where they could partly blame their goalkeeper, and partly also a bit a case of bad luck. And we have seen that, for example, when they were playing at Borussia Mönchengladbach, a fantastic match to watch, partly also when they were losing in Leverkusen. I wouldn't say they are just under a bad spell. They have a lot of problems, and I think we will talk about them, but I would like everybody to take a look at this aspect as well, because I think it's a bit distorting the perception of Borussia Dortmund right now.
Well, the stats would bear you out, Christoph. I just had a look at the XG for the game. Dortmund 1.5, Freiburg 0.2, which shows you that perhaps those goals could have been avoidable. Certainly the one with hits at the post, I think, was never a goal, really. Having said that, these are issues that are recurring. We see Dortmund starting slowly again. We see a 16-year-old Youssoufa Moukoko coming in and having more shots on goal than the combined team in the previous 60 minutes. And we see even Dortmund themselves questioning, between the lines at least, the attitude of the captain, Marco Reus, who was substituted and reacted very angrily. There is a sense, for everything that you have said, that there is a kind of a tension and a team that's not really gelling very well. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, that you have supposed leaders in the team that are not actually leading, as long as if we talk about the performance. I mean, Marco Reus is the team captain. We know that he can be a fantastic player, but he isn't this fantastic player this season so far, or only in very rare moments. You don't have the impression that he is working for the team. You have Emre Can, who is always behaving like a leader, so shouting around a lot, looking angrily, and so. But if you look at his performance, not especially in Freiburg, he was playing on the right hand side, a bit out of position for him. But is he really one of the backbones of the Borussia team? I don't think so. Axel Witsel is out because of injury. I think Mats Hummels has a decent season so far. But the idea that you have a core of experienced players on the one side, and on the other side you have young talents that whirl around them, yeah, it's actually not working very well. And I would rather blame the experienced players.
And it seems to be the way that this is taken. I saw some references to the team composition being questioned internally, that they've moved beyond pointing the finger of blame at the coach or coaches, and have perhaps belatedly realized that there is an issue there. And I think I completely agree with you, where I think we can blame Dortmund as a club who's been sensational in their transfer dealings by and large over the last nearly 10 years now, is that whenever they've tried to bolster the squad with experience, with someone who isn't 19, 20 and making the next step, but someone who's already supposed to be in a position where they're very consistent, where they are charismatic in the dressing room, where they can make a difference, those players don't seem to have worked out. Emre Can, you mentioned so far, I think he's struggling to assert his authority. Julian Brandt has completely lost his way. Mo Dahoud is now at the age where you'd expect him to take charge, is not really making any progress. And even someone like Thomas Meunier, who's very experienced and pretty solid, hasn't really helped the team to get to another level. If anything, I think what you lost by Hakimi leaving, for all his problems defensively, you didn't necessarily gain instability from Meunier. So there seems to be an issue of having this core of players who you can always depend on.
It's interesting how Terzic will handle the situation. I found it interesting that he took off Reus, because Reus is a kind of player who feels insulted if things like that happen. Maybe to survive at Borussia Dortmund, he has to kill, in inverted commas, one of the big players that is not performing very well. And maybe that will be Marco Reus. We will see in the days and weeks to come. I think it's probably the only chance that he has to maybe also gain authority with the team. But there are a lot of problems that maybe are too big to solve for a coach without that much experience, especially in working with star players. And so that could be very difficult. But on the other side, still, I think there is a fair chance that the pendulum swings in the other direction when you look at the what we've been talking around about bad luck and so on. And I think if you look at now a competitor of Borussia Dortmund, Eintracht Frankfurt is a very good example, because at the beginning of the season, when they had so many draws, unlucky draws, pretty often, they looked like lost in the wilderness of the mid-table, and now they are a real contender for the Champions League places, and maybe things develop in favor of Borussia Dortmund also.
Yeah, maybe Dortmund can be the next Frankfurt, but the worry is that they will be the next Frankfurt in the sense that they miss out on the Champions League, as Frankfurt did.
And that would be a disaster for Borussia Dortmund. It would be, in a way, that would have a similar impact as if, let's say, Cologne would be relegated, because the financial loss for a club of the size of Borussia Dortmund is terrible, especially in the situation we're having right now.
What would it mean in concrete terms? Would it mean having to sell not just Sancho, but maybe even Haaland? Would it mean having to change the squad composition, getting rid of some of those established players that you can no longer afford? What would be the practical outcome?
I think they would be forced to sell one of their star players, whoever that is, and most likely Haaland or Sancho. And then you have smaller means to renovate your squad and change the problems and alter change the situation, change the team and so on. You can't do it from a position of strength, but from weakness. And for Borussia, it's a bit standing at the crossroads right now. And I think there are a lot of concerns at the club right now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So you mentioned Frankfurt. They had another pretty convincing win with a fantastic Philipp Kostic chipping in with the goal. He's looked a new player, or maybe his old self again, for the last few games. And a lot of it is down to perhaps the return of his friend, Luka Jovic. Jovic not on the score sheet this time. But Frankfurt, just on a good run, or do we need to take them very seriously as a real contender?
Yeah, surely. I always like to see them play. I like the tough attitude, the muscular attitude that Adi Hütter tends to bring into his team. Sometimes it was a bit too much toughness alone, but during the season they They have improved. There is more fantasy also on the pitch. And I think a lot of the player you already mentioned, Filip Kostić, are in top form right now. And yes, we have to take them very seriously when it goes about the places in the Champions League.
Yeah, and I think the same is true still of Leverkusen. They lost some ground in recent weeks, but they came back with a bit of a bang. 5-2 against high-flying VfB Stuttgart. A very strong performance, certainly in the second half when they scored three goals. Leverkusen, that kind of inconsistency is sort of baked into the team because they're good but not quite as good as the Bayern and Leipzig. So can we somehow feel that there is going to be a bit more sustained brilliance? This time around, Demirbay scored two goals. He looked very good. Bailey has been pretty effective in recent weeks. Damari Gray also with a goal in his first game since moving from Leicester. That looks quite promising. So Leverkusen, in another word, can they find that bit of stability that they'll probably have to develop or find if they are to finish top four?
If we would know that, and I think it's something that is giving Peter Bosch a lot of sleepless nights, because what he, especially this year, this calendar year, it was a bit of a roller coaster ride with this team. Very good performances. We've been talking about the match against Borussia Dortmund, but and then this match at Rot-Weiß Essen in the German Cup last week, where they went out in extra time against a team from the fourth level of German football, from the Regionalliga West, and after being,
it doesn't get more on brand Leverkusen then.
Yeah, and having 28 shots during the 120 minutes, because it went to extra time, Leverkusen got 1-0 up and even managed to lose it 2-1. So they had 28 shots. They hit the post four times and so on. So yes, the factor of luck we've been talking about, I think it played a very important role in this match as well. But yeah, so I think also for this, with this game in mind, everybody at Leverkusen was extremely happy that they were not only winning and playing well, but they scored five goals. I think that will help them enormously in the weeks to come. But it's Leverkusen, and you never know.
You never know, indeed. Well, one of the biggest games that you mentioned before, and one of the biggest results impacting both ends of the table, was, of course, the derby in the Lower Rhine area between Borussia Mönchengladbach and Köln. And to the surprise of most people, perhaps even those well-disposed towards Köln, Köln won 2-1 with Elvis Rechbekay scoring two goals for the Billy Goats. Borussia Mönchengladbach with a really painful defeat. A defeat that some people were quick to blame on Marco Rose's extensive rotation policy. Seven changes from the cup game in midweek. What went on there, Christoph?
It's interesting how angrily a lot of supporters of Borussia Mönchengladbach reacted to this defeat. Okay, the first reason is, yes, it's always bad to lose against Cologne if you're a Mönchengladbach supporter. It's even worse when you're losing a Cologne team that is struggling, as this Cologne team does during this season. I think there is a growing frustration in Mönchengladbach about the coach. One reason is the open question if he'll be the coach next year, or if he will move on to Borussia Dortmund. Max Eberl, the manager of the club, said afterwards, still the chance is 98% that he will
be. Used to be 99%.
Yeah, it's dropped. It dropped 1 point. So we have to be very. So we have to listen between the lines. What happened with this 1%? drop. But it's like, it's a bit this, are we not good enough for you feeling? And then this rotation didn't help at all. I think from a sporting point, you could understand it because they had a very tough cup match in the week at Stuttgart, where they were winning 2-1. But that he was rotating so many key players of the team, Jonas Hofmann, Christoph Kramer, Alassane Player, Marcus Thuram, and so on, that angered the supporters. So there is a bit of a toxic situation right now at around the club. Not necessarily in the club, but around the club. And that's also a bit untypical for Borussia Mönchengladbach. So my advice, Marco Rose, you'd better be very careful in what you're saying and doing, because a lot of Borussia Mönchengladbach supporters are now after you. And if you look at Cologne, they were coming back from a cup defeat at mighty Jahn Regensburg, where they were going out of the cup competition, and it was interesting that they managed to turn it around with using the means that they are having, working aggressively against the ball, managing or hindering Borussia Mönchengladbach to have enough goal chances. So a big win for Cologne.
Yeah, and I want to talk about Cologne a little bit more in a second, but just one more line on Rose. Max Eberl made the point that there was no reason not to be open. They had a similar situation with Dieter Hecking leaving a couple of years ago, and they announced it very early and it didn't have a negative effect. I guess the difference then was that was the club's decision to extend his contract. This time it would be the coach walking away from the club. And I suspect that Marco Rose finds it difficult to communicate that openly to his players at the same time as wanting to have the full commitment and the buy-in and the sense of, you know, trying everything. It doesn't quite fit too well with the idea that he's off because Dortmund is a bigger job. Do you think we'll just see this kind of this funny dance that'll going on until the end of the season? Because I don't think there's any real doubt at this point that he is actually going to Dortmund. It might not have been formally agreed, but anyone you ask, sort of within football, seems to suggest that it is actually a done deal.
I think it's not a done deal. I think he is probably still undecided, and also, it's perfectly clear that Borussia Dortmund would like to sign him, and I guess they have also approached him. But what I've heard is that it's not a done deal right now, but it's a very likely deal to come. It would be good for everybody involved, especially Borussia Mönchengladbach and Marco Rose, if this situation in this kind of limbo wouldn't go on and on. I think if he would say, I had two great years at Mönchengladbach and now I move on, everybody would say, we're a bit sad, but that's how it is. And also how Max Eberl said, they themselves paid him out at Salzburg when he came from there, and to complain about some injustice if Borussia Dortmund does the same with him again, I think wouldn't be fair, and he knows that, and most people know that, and I thought would also think that his team, his players, would react very professionally, because they want to play international football again next season. They want to win the German Cup, and they want to go on in the Champions League. And so I think he wouldn't be a lame duck if he would say, I go to Borussia Dortmund.
One coach who we thought was even beyond lame duck status, more towards lunch, being lunch or toast status, was Marcus Gisdol. But not only did he win the derby, but that win for Köln now puts 4 points between them and Arminia Bielefeld in the relegation playoff spot. Bielefeld, though, a game in hand because there was too much snow on Sunday at the Alm, at their stadium against Werder. They couldn't play. So a chance still for them to make up some ground. But it does feel a lot safer now for Köln, at least as automatic relegation is concerned. Did you see that kind of performance coming, Christoph? And is it enough, you think, for Marcus Gisdol now to be given the confidence and the trust until the end of the season? I ask because there was an interesting observation by Lothar Matthäus, who I think had talked or had seen somebody talk to Horst Held, the sporting director, and Held had made the point that, in his judgment, the relationship between Gisdol and the club and the team and his impact and his work methods were actually all pretty sound, and therefore Köln didn't need to make that big change.
Gisdol started the season saying, not literally, but I won't promise you a rose garden. We will have to fight against relegation. We have limited means in a way. And he has been managing the situation decently. I mean, it's not fun to watch Cologne. But again, it's not a rose garden, and it wasn't a rose garden to be expected. Now he is in a better position, as if I would have expected Cologne to be at this time of the season. So it looks almost impossible for them to go down directly. They have a bit of a cushion, bit of distance to the relegation playoff place. I think everybody in Cologne knew that the season would be difficult, and so far Gisdol has done it pretty okay. But Cologne is a club with bigger expectations, and I think so. At the end of the season, when a lot of contracts will be finished, I think Cologne needs to change a bit or a bit more with their personnel to develop in regions of the table where their supporters want to see them.
Yeah, well, the only coach who could promise rose gardens was, of course, Hans Meyer, but he's not involved.
He actually had a rose garden, exactly. or he said to have a rose garden. I always doubted it, that he actually had it.
Well, it does look slightly more rosy for Mainz, because they did get all 3 points in a big game at home to Union. Union showing a little bit signs of wear and tear, perhaps not quite having the same energy, the same thrust and cutting edge in recent games. And Mainz doing just enough to get 3 points to at least keep the distance between them and safety in a probable dimension. It's still 4 points, but 4 points is not insurmountable. And suddenly the team that has to worry, apart from Schalke, who lost again, of course, and now on 8 points and look all but doomed, sad to say, 3-0 at home to Leipzig. Don't think we have to say too much more, not to rub it in. But Hertha, now you said this was a good Hertha,
yeah,
that lost at home to Bayern on Friday night. But this good Hertha are on 17 points and in acute danger of relegation. I think they have a really, really tough fixture list coming up as well. They're away to Stuttgart, then they have Leipzig, then Wolfsburg, Augsburg, okay, but then Dortmund, Leverkusen, Union and Gladbach. Ouch.
Yeah. Ouch, yeah. But again, they looked improved against Bayern. And with a little bit of luck and a bit more concentrated Mateusz Kunja, 2 minutes from time, they could have equalized even against Bayern. And what's the improvement was is that Pal Dardai managed to give them something like that, like looked like a reliable structure. So they were defensively very well organized, and I think that's the key quality of Pal Dardai's team, that they are defensively very well organized. I mean, when he was Hertha coach some years back, there were that was their trademark. Sometimes it was, to be honest, almost impossible to watch because it was so boring. But now, with having much better players and giving them a structure on the field, I wouldn't be too pessimistic that they get them some points even in the weeks to come, even with this, you mentioned them, very tough opponents.
Yeah, and they did create some chances. Luka Bacchio had a really big one. Neuer saved well early on. So it could have gone a different way. But I guess Bayern's win could also have been slightly more emphatic because they'd missed a penalty when Robert Lewandowski, very uncharacteristically, having his pen saved by Rune Jahrstein, who'd come back in goal.
Yeah, he was only the second goalkeeper in the Bundesliga who managed to save a penalty from Lewandowski.
Impressive. Who was the first one?
Manuel Neuer.
Well, that's so clever from Bayern to make sure that Neuer doesn't have to save any. Or the other way around, that Lewandowski will not come up against Neuer anymore. Bayern's win, you said they were slightly improved. They weren't convincing. They did enough. It again felt like the sort of win that Bayern seemed to do better than others in getting, because they're not at their best, they're not really playing well, but they find the win, which separates them from everyone else.
Yeah, that's it. I would agree that they were playing well, but they were also not playing badly. So it was a average, decent Bayern performance without much, that didn't impress. They could have scored 1-2 goals more, but as we said, they also could have got the equalizer a few seconds or minutes from the end of the game. So, but they deserve to win it, no doubt about it. And that's how they do it. And my impression is this crisis. If it was a crisis when they were losing, for example, in the German Cup at Kiel, is over. Not in great style, but they look better organized in playing against the ball and very solid and alone at the top. They are going towards the next German title.
And they're going to conquer the world. Or at least the Club World Cup competition in Qatar. They're up against Al Ahly of, I hope that's the right pronunciation, of Egypt in the semi-final on Monday night. But it wasn't that easy getting there. They had done everything possible to make sure they can fly out directly after the game on Friday night from Berlin. The game was moved 30 minutes forward. That left them with about 45 minutes to get on board and to fly off before midnight, because at midnight in Berlin, the ban kicks in. You're not allowed to fly between midnight and I think 7 o'clock or something like that. Unfortunately for Bayern, when the pilot told the tower that he was ready for takeoff, the tower said, sorry, it's already 3 past midnight and you have to stay on the ground and you can fly at 7 in the morning. So that's what they did. And Bayern, as you can imagine, not happy, not happy at all. And Karl-Heinz Rummenigge even alleging a conspiracy, saying he had a feeling that someone did not like them and was throwing spanner in the works. Not at the airport, they were very nice to them, but the people in charge of the air control of the regional state of Brandenburg. And that's why it's a big scandal. according to him and all of
this. Yeah, I think they will bring it to a court of human rights violations. So it Bayern Munich made a lot of noise about it, being treated like that, and my impression, they made too much noise. I understand their frustration. Because they, as you said, they were, as Bayern always is, perfectly well organized. They were rushing from the Olympia Stadium to the airport. Hansi Flick's press conference only lasted, I think, 2 minutes or so. So they didn't lose any time. And the problem was, you were mentioning the weather in Germany, or especially in Berlin, so they had to de-ice the wings of the airplane, and that was the problem, because it was a big airplane and it took too long. And so if there is a conspiracy between Brandenburg and Egypt, I don't know, to help Al-Ahli to meet a worn out opponent who had to sleep on the airplane, I think. Okay. Yeah, they made a lot of it.
I get the sense that you don't take this very seriously, Christoph.
I don't want to joke a bit too much, because if you put a lot of energy in the organizing this, and you said the match was even moved 1 hour, half an hour earlier, and so on. So I think they really did everything they could, but yeah, it's just what can happen. And on the other hand side, if it's good for the people living close to the airport that there are no planes in the air after midnight, because they have to sleep. So maybe more people would have been woken up by another airplane than the ones who had to spend their night at the airport.
Yeah, that's a very worthy consideration. I would just have two things to add. First of all, this would have never happened with Tegel.
Yeah.
Tegel, the old airport, much closer to the city center, closer to the Olympia Stadion as well. This is the new airport, the BER, which has been how many years late? Five or six?
Rather seven.
Seven. 7 years late. And I have some sympathy with Bayern's argument, because if Berlin is, or I guess Brandenburg in this case, one thing they're not really famous for is adhering to the rules. If it had happened in Bavaria, in Swabia, you'd think, okay, midnight is midnight. But I think they expected the much more relaxed attitude when it comes to authority, when it comes to the rules in the German capital, to someone just go, yeah, you know what? It's just a couple minutes past midnight. Off you go, Bayern. But no, German punctuality was their undoing.
Maybe the Brandenburg people want to show the others in Bavaria and in Swabia that they can be as Bavarian and Swabian as anybody else. But they shouldn't have made so much noise. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, of course I agree. I mean, but making noise is Bayern's
second name.
Raison d'être. So you're not going to stop them. Let's see if they can make some more positive noise when they return from their trip to the Gulf, maybe with a new shiny cup in tow. We'll have to see then. We'll check that out and everything else that goes on in the Bundesliga next week. Christoph will be back. I hope you'll be back as well, dear listener. Until then, take care of yourself.
The Athletic.